Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. Check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. Farmer-owned, Vermont-grown, Sunset Lake CBD. Hey listeners, I want to tell you about Music Masters Collective, a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. These events give you the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like the Fab Four, Steve Earle, Richard Thompson, John Scofield, Nels Klein, the Milk Carton Kids, and many more. This June, join the Wait Band, featuring members of the band and the Levon Helm Band with special guests, including Jimmy Vivino, Bob Margolin, Lost Leaders, Chris O'Leary, Cindy Cashdollar, Stony Creek Band, Rob Fraboni, Larry Packer, and so many more at Camp Cripple Creek. This all-inclusive music vacation in the Catskill Mountains of upstate New York promises to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience featuring performances, workshops, jams, comfortable lodging, and superb dining. Visit campcripplecreek.com/undermine to register today. That's campcripplecreek.com/undermine.
This is Benji Eisen with a little surprise encore for this episode. Tom and RJ left the building early to go buy sketchy veggie burritos on lot or something. But here we have friend of the pod, keyboardist of Humphreys McGee, our friend Joel Cummins, who was there on the University of Illinois campus on this particular night 25 years ago today. Fall 97, walking out of Assembly Hall after Phish just performed the four-song second set that you guys just heard Tom, RJ, and Andy from Jam Bass talk about. Joel, this night was before Humphreys McGee formed as a band, I think, but you still went to the show with one of your future bandmates. Is that right?
It's true. We had gotten together, I think, probably less than a week before this, and Ryan and Brennan had proposed to Mike Miro and I, Mike and I were playing together in another band called Stomper Bob, that we should both quit our bands and start a new band together because we all wanted to do this live music thing as opposed to, you know, go get a desk job like all of our other Notre Dame friends. So, yeah, Ryan and I and a couple other buddies, Ryan and I lived in the same dorm, I think. I'm not sure it's still at this point, but definitely the year before that we did. And go ahead.
Back up for 1 second. Ryan Stasek.
Ryan Stasek, yeah, the bassist of Humphreys McGee. So he basically, the way we met was he made me ditch a class one day to go get coffee with him and listen to him ramble about how he wanted to be a musician, but his parents thought it was a terrible idea. So
that plays.
Yeah, totally. So so accordingly, we ditched another afternoon of classes together and made the drive from South Bend to Champaign, Illinois, to Assembly Hall. And did they do a show there in 96? I was definitely there in 95.
They did 95, and I drawing a blank in 96 now.
I feel like they might have, but who knows? Anyway, I'd been there before to see fish, so I kind of, you know, knew the lay of the land. And also being a Chicago guy, I'd visited friends at University of Illinois, so felt pretty comfortable making the trip down there and going to it. So we decided, and
they did it on November 8th, 1996. That's right, because I have the tapes.
I'm pretty sure I went to that one with Jeremy Welsh. So who's now the Humphreys McGee webmaster amongst, you know, he's a more famous architect than anything in our scene. But anyway, we made the decision to eat some shrooms on the way down to the show. And at that point, I was pretty in tune with how Phish was operating and how they were creating set lists. And I'd kind of, you know, once Humphrey started, that was the point where we all kind of had to turn it off and move on to our own respective careers and, you know, not try to emulate what those guys were doing. But at that point, you know, it was like 94, 95, 96, and 97. Those were the years where I was really into Phish and going to see lots of shows. And so we went to the show. And I don't really remember much about the first set, but I told Stasek at set break, they're going to open with 2001. And when they walked out and did that, he just looked at me like, how the fuck did you know that? You know? And so it was this great moment.
The mushrooms in full bloom.
Full bloom, yeah. I mean, I completely blew his mind at that point. And at some point late in 2001, you know, I mean, this was their like cow funk period, right? So I looked at him and I was like, it's Wolfman's. They're going to Wolfman's. And they did it. And again, now he looks at me and he's like, you're insane, dude. What is this? How do you, did you see the set list? And I'm like, no. I'm like, I don't think they have a set list in advance. Trade just calls the songs, right? So what was the third song? I'm trying to remember what that was. Oh, I know Taste was in there.
It was a four song second set, and it goes from 2001 to Wolfman's Brother to Matthew's Super Policeman. But you know that because we were calling it that night.
Yeah.
You need mushrooms now to go back and
yeah, to bring me back. Exactly. And so, yeah, to basically make a long story short, I called those last two songs too. And again, like 2 or 3 minutes before they started, it wasn't like they had moved on to the idea. And I was like, this is what's going to happen. Now, I'd looked at the previous set list, so I had an idea of what they were not going to play, you know? But, yeah, we walked out of that show. And, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons, at least early on, Stasek had some respect for me. I feel like now it's kind of waned, you know? But those early days, yeah, we walked out of that show, and he was just like, I mean, you know, he was just speechless. He was like, I don't understand what happened. How did that happen? How did you know all this? Yeah. So, you know, I've got a decent knack for set lists. I would still like to think that I'm okay at crafting a good set list.
Did you call the encore?
I did not call the encore. I think I you know, at that point I was like, I'm good. I'm not going to ruin my perfection here.
Yeah. Well, you got 4 for 4, which is 100% for a 4-song second set.
Needless to say, it was an epic show, and it was one of those where I was like, wow, these guys are still crushing it. And I think, you know, at that point, it was kind of like, where do they take it from here? You know, and I think there's kind of a decent consensus that the Island Tour of 98 was kind of the wrap up of that time period of that mode. But to me, that was, you know, Phish could still fire on all cylinders with songs like Taste, where, you know, Paige and Trey are just doing this beautiful melodic, you know, simple lines intertwining sort of thing. But they had that deep, dark, groovy funk thing that was going on. And there was something also, I actually listened back to the set like a week ago, and the crowds back then, I like, you know, I don't want to set up this 1.0, 2.0, 3.0 thing, but the energy of the crowds was just, it was you could feel the intensity and the youth and the, you know, there was still that element of, I think amongst the fan base, there's something to prove. And everybody was trying to tell their friends like, no, this is the greatest live band touring right now.
Yep. And it was new. And of course, the fall 97, as you mentioned, had that Cal Funk energy to it that I agree. I think the Island Tour was the exclamation mark for it. But this whole fall 97 tour was one big unfolding story.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, and obviously all of those tunes from Story of the Ghost that were in the rotation, I think that were introduced like in the summer in Europe. Is that right?
That is right. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, you had Ghost obviously is kind of the centerpiece of that. But there was this sound, you know, Meat, I think back to like that one. There was just these new songs that were in the catalog that provided provided this sort of exploratory framework for that funkier sound for them. So, you know, it was definitely cool to be part of the fan base and, you know, really excited about this new material that they were coming out with and not knowing where they were going to take these things every night, but knowing that you were in for some sort of deep exploration every time.
Yep. And you have the Ghost and you have the Black Eyed Katie, but on this night, it's the Wolfman's brother that really, you know, one of the greatest Wolfman's brothers of all time, I think.
Without a doubt.
Well, there you have it, folks. It was a historic night, not only for Fish, but also for Humphrey's Mickey. Thanks for sticking around for the encore. It's Possum, by the way. Your end is still the road. We will see everyone 2 days from now, 25 years ago, that means, when we set the flux capacitor on the DeLorean. I guess, actually, you know, I should say when we set the controls for the heart of the mothership, turning the knob to 1121 at Hampton Coliseum. I have a feeling about that one. We'll see you soon. Thanks for joining us. And thank you, Joel.
Thanks, Benji.
Osiris. Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the one-hit thunder or were nothing more than a one-hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week, so pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.